This is Fate's Wide Wheel, a Quantum Leap podcast with Sam and Dennis. Every week, we review an episode of the cult classic time travel series and decide whether it holds up to present-day viewing. And hopefully, we'll entertain you along the way. Be sure to check us out on our website, fwwquantumleappod.com, and also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under Fate's Wide Wheel. And be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, everybody. Long time. Hey, no see.
I've missed that hello, everybody.
How are you doing, Sam?
I'm good, Dennis. I'm good. It's, it has been a while, since summer, at least, right? And
our last episode was early June, like days before, about a week before we closed on our new home in Southern Illinois. And
you moved, we had a baby, not you and I, we didn't have
a baby. let's be clear, we did not have a baby. That is not the purpose of this episode, listeners. We did not have a baby, you and me.
My wife gave birth to a son in October, and
October 25th.
That's right, October 25th.
I felt like an asshole because I wished you a Merry Christmas on the 25th. I texted you, and it did not even click that it was also your son's 2-month birthday. Sorry about that.
No, when we're counting months,
And there was there a tornado warning in Chicago the night that he was born? There was a tornado warning down here. Actually, when you texted me to say it was go time, we had just gotten down into our basement because. The sirens went off and everything, and it turned out fine. Like we didn't hardly get anything in our neighborhood, but
we were pretty oblivious to it. It's funny, Hattie was born in the afternoon, early evening, and Jude decided to flip the script entirely, and he was born at about 4 a.m. So
all right.
That was a different experience to say the least, but, everything went great. And, he's great. It's been a nice, really nice 3 months. Jess goes back to work next week, working remotely still. They're not going back into the office. It'll be interesting. And I'm pulling the stay at home dad gig. So, it's been fun preparing for that. And, big sister loves having a little brother, and life is good. I can't complain. We are thinking about moving at some point here in the very near future. We've not, we've been thinking about it, I guess, for, not quite a year, but it feels like it now. And, I think that'll probably happen sooner than later, but we shall see. So, other than that, things are good. I can't complain. I've been doing little gigs here and there, picking up, kind of freelance work when I can. And, had an acting gig over the summer that was fun. I was actually a mock witness for the San Diego Public Defenders Program, which is interesting to say the least. But it ended up being a lot of fun. It was actually very, very fulfilling, very satisfying, involved a lot of, like improv and that sort of stuff. And working on those cases, which I can say nothing about under penalty of law, working in those cases was really cool. Some of those cases and the people that were involved, all you can do is just hope that, they get a fair shake because, it was enlightening to say the least. But
I want to hear more about that later. But we probably just dive in to why we're here. What brought us out? We've been talking about it for months, but what finally brought us out of retirement was the announcement a couple days ago. Finally, not just people blowing smoke up our butts, but NBC actually ordered a pilot.
Yeah,
for a. Not a reboot, but a continuation of the show. New cast, but a continuation.
Yeah. We started talking about the potential for that, I think, probably on our first episode. We seriously started talking about it when Peacock was announced, because one of the initial rumors for Peacock and this is like 2 years ago now, was that they would, that Quantum Leap was the property they were looking at to put on streaming. We've noted before that we found it odd that Quantum Leap was not on Peacock right away for streaming, because it was a show that they had actually talked about. And, you know, we kind of thought, well, you know, I think if it happens, it'll be on Peacock, but we were both kind of like, we're okay if it doesn't happen, you know? Once we hit Mirror Image and wrapped up our coverage of Quantum Leap as a television show, we gave some more thoughts about what we thought about the potential for a reboot or a sequel. I've been mostly on the fence. I kind of came to the conclusion that I was okay if it never happened. That said, there were certainly some ideas that we both had that we would have loved to have seen. And one of the things that I will throw out there, and of course, the danger, I guess, of proposing ideas right now, and you see so many people do it on the internet, they may not understand this, is that once that happens, oftentimes, if a writer sees it or hears about it, they immediately disregard it, even if it's something that they wanted to do, because they have to then deal with the potential legal ramifications of somebody on the internet coming to them and saying like, hey, I thought about this idea, you know, before you did, etc.
You know, that's interesting. I've never thought about that in terms of now.
Yeah.
Because I remember like reading, like, especially if you read Matt's book, Beyond the Mirror Image, like there's some stories in there talking about like how they had to be very careful about avoiding ideas.
Yeah.
Particularly like around eight and a half months, like the pregnancy episode. Like there's a funny story in the book that I won't repeat now. It's like when someone sent them an unsolicited script about a pregnant woman, and when they saw what it was, like they got it out of their office like it was on fire, because they didn't want to have to deal with it. But I never thought about it in a modern context of how does that work with like rumors and stuff being posted online. I don't know.
I don't know either. I know the only reason that I bring it up and that I know anything about it at all is because J. Michael Straczynski, when he was developing Babylon 5, there was a listserv group that he posted to on like recarts.tv. And this is before the show even aired. And there was a small but loyal fan base even before the show started to air, because there were people looking for an alternative to Star Trek, basically. And Straczynski was talking about how his show was going to be, you know, kind of more hard sci-fi than Star Trek was, that it was going to have this 5-year plan, that there was an arc to the story, that there, you know, all this sort of stuff. So people were already excited before the show even premiered. And he would post stuff on there from time to time. And once the show started airing, people would inevitably like start posting and be like, oh, I would love to see blah, blah, blah for this character, that character, or whatever. And, you know, and he's, you know, ended up writing and saying like, please don't send me your story ideas. You know, I don't want to see posts for story ideas, because it gets into kind of a sticky situation legally for me. Because if you post something that I've already written and then it, you know, and then you see it on TV, you know, what's to stop somebody from saying, hey, I came up with that idea first or whatnot. And yes, I have scripts that I've been working on for, you know, a decade that I can show people and whatnot, but still it's, you know, so it is kind of probably a gray area. And it's also one of those things where it's like, I'm never going to go to the writers or producers of this potential reboot if they use an idea that we say on this show or have said on this show, because I just want to see a successful show. And, you know, and some of these ideas I just personally think are cool. So if they happen to come up with them on their own, not that they're going to listen to this podcast, let's be honest.
All right. I want to loop back around to that later, but let's get more into like what we know. Now, first off, because I've had this question pop into my head, but now I'm looking at Martin Garrow's announcement on Twitter right now.
Yeah.
It looks like if this gets picked up, it is going, like the plan is, at least right now, it's going to be on NBC, not Peacock.
Yeah.
Or am I stretching that?
The funny thing is I've seen conflicting things, because initially it seems like most of the reports had it at NBC. And it seems like based on Martin Garrow, who's the executive producer, that it looks like NBC. There are a couple of reports out there on websites that do have a, you know, some credibility that seem to direct it at saying NBC/Peacock. So I don't know. Now, it could be that they're saying NBC/Peacock because almost all of NBC's current shows are immediately dropped on Peacock the day after they air. So that,
but not the other way around, though.
Exactly.
There's some original shows on Peacock.
There are some, yes, there are Peacock originals
that aren't on NBC. Okay,
right. And like, for instance, you know, I know that one of the like articles that I was reading, and this is all opinion, this is not any sort of factual stuff, but they were talking about how, you know, Peacock was clearly setting a precedent for reviving like 90s shows already with their Saved by the Bell reboot and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, Quantum Leap might fit into that space on Peacock. Personally, based off of what we saw from like The Hollywood Reporter and Deadline and Martin Garrow, his own tweet, it does seem like, yes, it would be on NBC and not just on Peacock.
Yeah. Or if anything, they get the pilot and they're not sure about it, they may bump it down to Peacock or something.
Sure.
Sure.
You know, and for what it's worth, there's no, I mean, in this day and age, there's, I can't help but think of it as being, you know, it doesn't feel like a backstep to go on a Peacock. You know what I mean?
No, like even like I was thinking like before we started recording, like I don't care where the show ends up,
right.
Whether it's on network TV or Peacock or whatever. I want it to end up where it can creatively be what they want it to be. They can take chances with it and it will have a chance to flourish.
Yes.
And get beyond one season.
Yes.
I will subscribe to whatever that streaming right. service is, if it's on streaming or otherwise.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that, you know, the nice thing is let's face it, a majority of people out there probably already have access to Peacock, you know, by way of their Xfinity plans. So it's easy, it's accessible. It's not necessarily a hard thing to get if it were to be on Peacock. And then obviously if you're watching on NBC, it's right over the air. So what we know that the showrunners are going to be Stephen Lillian and Brian Winbrandt, who currently are the creators and showrunners on La Brea. They're the producers. That Martin Garrow will be the executive producer. We know that Deborah Pratt and Donald Belisario will be getting producer credits. Anytime an article just flat out mentions somebody not being involved by name, it makes me think that they will eventually be involved. So the fact that they throw Bakula's name out, he's going to be in the show.
He's going to be involved somehow, at least some brief cameo. He obviously has love and appreciation for the show that basically got him like really started on his career.
Right.
Unless the showrunners come out and say, we are not interested, there is no way Bakula is not going to be involved in the show in some way, shape, or form.
And I don't think there's any way that that would happen at all. I think, you know, the other thing that's worth noting, we'll talk a little bit about briefly, we're not going to do a deep dive necessarily. We'll talk a little bit about their careers here in a second. But it's worth noting that Dennis and I, believe it or not, actually have a source. We have a source. And our source tells us that that the producers are very passionate about the show, very respectful of the show, very understanding of what made the show work and speak to people. Which I think is the only, like, that's the chief thing you want from your producers and showrunners, as far as I'm concerned, when they're handling a property like this. I think that knowing that this is going to be a sequel, you know, I think that in our modern parlance, like, reboot and sequel have become almost interchangeable. You know what I mean? Like, if a show is going to be completely different nowadays, we're going to call it a reimagining, you know what I mean? Like, so reboot, sequel, whatever you want to call it is fine. But I think it seems as though it's in good hands. And there's some other things that we'll get to over time. And certainly we hope that at some point we're able to not only reveal our source, but, you know, have them on and talk a little bit more directly. But in the meantime, because things are in flux and because, quite frankly, we could say things that don't end up happening, even though I do trust this person quite a bit, you know, that we want to be sensitive, obviously, to their position as well. So that's kind of cool.
It is.
Yeah.
I'm excited. When you started texting me info last night, I was like, yeah.
The thing is it's like, I thought about reaching out and then all of a sudden, like, you know, they're sending me a message and I'm just sort of like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't even have to send them a message. They reached out to me. I think that I want to approach this in an optimistic fashion, you know?
I mean, I'm very excited, and I know there's a lot of chatter and some comments in the things that we posted and other Quantum Leap groups on Facebook. There is this whole thing like they don't believe that the show can't be successful if Scott Bakula and Dean Stockwell Stockwell passed away back in the fall, unless they are directly involved and they are the stars of the show.
Yeah.
And I love the stars of the original show, obviously, like I've never felt that way. Like, I've always wanted like them to be involved in some way, but I think the show has legs. It can evolve past those characters, past the original show.
Yeah.
And go on. So even if it comes on and I end up not liking it, and I've said this before, I will hate watch the crap out of the show.
Right.
Every episode, and I will analyze it and I will tell you in an intelligent way why I don't like it, but I will still watch it.
Yes. Yeah. I completely agree. And I think that, I think it has to change. It has to evolve. This is not going to be Sam and Al episode of the week. It's not, you know, this is going to be, again, indicated by our source, this is going to be more of an ensemble show, that there will be, you know, a lead, if you will, and that, I can only infer based on some things that I've heard that it most likely will be a female lead, that female lead will not be Sammy Joe. That's not to say that Sammy Joe won't be in the show, won't be a character that they put into the show, but I don't believe that, you know, that our main kind of unit or ensemble will be, include her.
Sure.
I think that they will probably be younger, you know, cause that's what we do these days.
Sure.
I think it'll probably just kind of evolve from there, that it will be, you know, as we've spoken about before on the podcast, that it will likely be split between the missions and, you know, present day at the project, that there will be an arc, that there will be connective tissue between episodes. There will probably be cliffhangers. You know, I wouldn't be at all surprised if they kind of take the Alias pattern almost, where it's like you've got leaps that are finishing halfway through the episode, a new leap begins, and then we get a cliffhanger at the end of the episode that leads us into finishing the mission on the next episode, which leads us to the leap. So the leaps are actually taking place mid-episode as opposed to at the beginning and end of each episode.
Interesting. Which is surprise. Which is
that's speculation. I should note real quick, that's not anything that's not inside info. That's just idle speculation.
Sure. I mean, it is worth noting that when Belisario originally conceived the series, or I should say Belisario and Pratt, like Belisario did have the idea that that sometimes there would be episodes, like there would be like two leaps in an episode.
Right.
And sometimes, like in syndication, they may like swap and like, you know, like move episodes around or whatever, which is not exactly the same thing you said. But yes, I think it's going to be kind of a somewhat different format. And I'm really looking forward to seeing more of the project, because that's one of the things I loved about the novels. As imperfect as some of the novels were, the thing that I loved is that there was always a story going on back at the project.
Right.
In particular, the ones that didn't involve Sammy Joe. And speaking of Sammy Joe, I think it would be interesting to like jump back and talk about like the rumors of new series over the last 30 years and the almost reboots. And the closest time that we came was in the early 2000s. It was going to be a made for TV movie for the Sci-Fi Channel.
Right.
And a pilot for a new series that was going to feature Sammy Joe. And it's worth noting that in an effort to have Sammy Joe fit the correct age for like a younger audience, they were going to fudge the timeline
right
from trilogy, because Sammy Joe was born, I can't remember like the exact timeline, was born in the early 1960s in the series, so that she was 11 years old by the third part of trilogy, and Sam met her in that time frame.
Right.
They were going to make her born in the 70s. And actually, if I remember correctly, they were going to say that Sam had sired her as the lawyer that he played.
Okay.
In the third part of trilogy. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm glad that that didn't happen.
As well as I was disappointed that when I read the synopsis in Matt's book, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of glad that reboot didn't happen.
The character would be, you know, if the show is indeed set in present day in 2022 or 2023, although I do think that we're looking at a fall, potentially a fall premiere date for this. So
I think that, yeah, that's really, yeah.
Yeah. So if it's set in 2022, Sammy Jo would be 55 years old because she was born in 1967. So, you know, we're looking at a character in their 50s, you know, so they're probably casting an actor somewhere in their, you know, late 40s to early 50s to play the role. I mean, again, she might not be involved at all.
Maybe
but
not.
I do think that, you know, again, based off of what we've already heard, that there's a chance that she could indeed be a part of the show, because it is a sequel, and that is a legacy character that exists, that they could bring in easily to help kind of establish some connective tissue. You know, other potentials would obviously be Al's daughters as well.
Sure. Well, I can't help but imagine, like you said, if the new showrunners, if they have a great respect for the show, Sammy Jo will at least be mentioned in some way. They're not going
to
just pretend like, you know, that character never happened.
Right.
Al's daughters present an interesting thing because, like, you know, we just know them from like very briefly from the final episode.
Right.
We know that they exist, and that's about it.
Yeah. And most likely they would be, you know, based off of the photograph and based off of when Al gets back from Vietnam and everything, they would probably be in their 30s or 40s.
In the time of the series?
You would think.
Somewhere around there. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, you know, I think that as far as sort of like those periphery, you know, legacy characters go, you know, those clearly could participate in some fashion. You know, the big one in my mind, and obviously with Deborah Pratt's involvement, I think is something that we could, you know, easily see is Ziggy, I imagine, will be a part of the show. I can't imagine that you wouldn't have that you wouldn't have in the pilot, you know, this group of our young crusaders dusting off Ziggy and firing her back up to get, you know what I mean? To sort of start things off. I think that the rest of the team, you know, maybe you'll see, a Dr. Beaks, you know, return. I doubt it.
I think you'll see a Dr. Beaks like character, maybe.
Like that character. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The other characters, that would be interesting in a potential return could be the Evil Leapers. That project, and to see if there's some sort of parallel there. And then of course the other big one is Scott Bakula, Sam Beckett. I will be happy to see whatever they decide to do with Sam's character. I really will. I still hold to the idea that what I would love to see more than anything, if they do this reboot, is that we don't see him for the entirety of that first season. That the, you know, that these kids are trying to find him and figure out how this worked, et cetera, whatever. And I say kids, they're not going to be kids. Probably going to cast actors, you know, that are probably in their 20s. Let's face it.
Sure.
And that when we get to the finale of season one, they walk into Al's place in Pennsylvania and Sam's the guy behind the bar. That to me is like the perfect place for that character to reside. Now, the thought that Sam is still out there doing Sam Beckett things, as we saw in the original TV show, is nostalgia. that's what is driving a lot of people who are saying, I'm not going to watch a show without Sam doing Sam things. It's like, that's you're literally being driven by nostalgia.
Yeah. I've said it before. Like, I know Scott Bakula is very fit. I know he did a lot of action oriented stuff in NCIS New Orleans. I do not want to come back and find Sam 30 years later, still leaping in time.
No,
the way he is, he would have gone insane by this point.
Because the other thing is, the other thing that we know from the outset that the premise will have to include is that Al is no longer with us. Now, whether that means that Al recently passed and that's the impetus for this new team to try to turn things back on, you know, maybe Al got pushed out at some point. They thought he was this crazy old admiral who had these stories of his friend leaping through time. And, you know, and one of these new explorers / leapers, whatever, adventurers is driven by a dying man's wish to go and turn Ziggy back on and fire up the accelerator. You know, who knows? That's a great premise. I mean, maybe not a great premise, but that's a premise that you could go with easily. So, you know, I think that that's something that they will have to deal with. They will have to deal with Al's absence in some fashion. When did Al die? Did Al ever give up? Did, you know, I think that that is going to be key to the show. So I think that one thing that I would definitely tell potential viewers, especially the people that are out there saying, you know, like, I won't watch it without Scott Bakula, or, you know, I have my doubts about this or anything like that, is Sam Beckett and Al Calavici will be absolutely integral to this show. Their presence will be felt from the get-go. There is no doubt in my mind that they will be involved. You just might never see them on screen. And that's okay.
I'm fine with that.
Right?
I'm on board. Like I said, we know we're going to see Scott Bakula on screen. You know, I really like, yeah, we haven't talked, like, we haven't recorded everything, like, you know, since Dean Stockwell passed away.
Yeah.
And that was like, and the thing, it's like, and I posted, like, you know, this is one of the, like, the few celebrity deaths that really affected me. And that I was sad about, but I was also kind of braced for it because, like, I know with, like, how old he was and various health issues over the last few years, I knew it was coming. It wasn't like, you know, some huge surprise or something, you know. I was more shocked by Betty White than, you know, than, now you said it, like, I hadn't really thought about it. Now with Dean having passed away, I think now in my headcanon, I am telling myself that after the final episode, they lost Sam and they were never able to reestablish contact. I think after the last episode, Sam may have continued leaping as himself.
Yeah. Yep.
Like he did appearing in Beth's living room.
Yeah.
And that it took a very different turn. And maybe what shut Project Quantum Leap down was that they lost Sam.
Yeah. So here's a couple of things. One, it was incredibly difficult for me to articulate the way that I was feeling when I heard about Dean Stockwell dying. It happened kind of in the middle of the night when I heard the news. And I felt kind of empty about it, you know, and it was a very strange feeling. It was difficult for me to really feel like I thought I would feel. And it didn't hit me until Scott Bakula's Instagram post and reading about the way that he was with children on the set and child actors. And that was kind of what broke me. And it's very strange in a way, you know, because he had been retired. He had been away from things. You know, I was always glad when I saw him. I remember when, you know, he made the cameo on Enterprise, when he was in Battlestar Galactica, you know what I mean? When I would see him, I would always be, and I remember during Galactica, I was sort of like, that's awesome. They've got Dean Stockwell in Battlestar Galactica. But it was difficult for me to process, to be completely honest with you, because he was such a huge part of my childhood.
Sure.
And I still, there's still an element where I feel this sadness, you know, this kind of like this wave of grief almost, which is a strange thing to feel with a celebrity. Mm-hmm. But it's true. The next thing that I'll say is that I think that you're absolutely right. I think that for the TV show to work in a way, for the TV show to have a reason, I think you're right. I think that they lost Sam after Mirror Image and they never got him back. And I know that there are a lot of people out there like, no, or whatever. And it's like, the fact is like we saw, you know, Dr. Sam Beckett never returned home. We know that. And one of the reasons why he probably never returned home is exactly what you said. They lost him. They shut the project down. That was it. Here's another thought that I had. As Sam leaps around as himself, I started to think, will these new characters or new character, if there's only one person leaping, which I think is the right thing to do, frankly. I think if you've got like three or four people.
Oh God. If not, this turns into Team Knight Rider and then I'm flipping a table and I'm out.
Yeah. Because there are so many other shows that already do that. You've got Doctor Who, you've got that. What was that show that NBC did a couple of years ago that you tried to get me to watch that I never ended up watching? Timeless.
Let's loop back to that, but yes, I see your point.
You got
the point you're
Who.
Trying to make.
You've got, you yeah. know what I mean? So I would like there to just be one leaper. Now the thought that I then had is like, well, would they be leaping as themselves or, and then I was like, well, that would be stupid. The conceit of the show, they would have to be leaping into other people. Then I started to think, and this is where I started to get depressed. If they're leaping in their own lifetime, that means that we're only going to see people leaping from like the late 80s, probably, to present day.
I love that though, because it is as close as a parallel as you can get to the original series.
Except as someone who lived through the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s, there is absolutely nothing as interesting to the fabric of our society and popular culture that happened in those decades compared to the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying
that they won't write amazing stories and be able to tell amazing stories. I mean, look at something like Stranger Things set in the 80s or whatever. I'm not saying that you can't do that. I'm just saying that to me, looking at it, there is a part of me that's like, you cut off a lot of the well, which got me to think my next thought. What if as a part of this project, because we know Ziggy is connected to Sam in like a fashion beyond just that he built this computer, what if they can actually leap within Sam's lifetime instead of just their own, which then gives us the breadth of the, you know, the late 50s all the way to the 2020s, which I think actually might be a better route to take because it gives you a bigger sandbox to play in.
I don't know if I agree with that. It's like, it's a parallel because like, you know, like the 90s, we're kind of nostalgic for the 90s now, the way we were the way culture was nostalgic for the 50s and the late 80s when Quantum Leap came out. This kind of like, you know, this idealized idea. And then in the start of the 1960s kind of upturned everything with culture movement, Vietnam, civil rights movement, JFK's assassination, so on and so forth. And for us, like that parallel is 9/11. And that's right. When everything kind of upshifted there. And then you got, you know, then you got the wars and you got, you know, you got the financial crisis of 2008, you got Obama's election. To me, I think it's this wonderful parallel. And I think that they have a lot to play with from the last.
No, you just sold me.
From 30 some odd years.
You just sold me. There's a lot of stories and there's even, you know, unfortunately, there are even striking parallels that could be played off of. Compared to a lot of what the original show was dealing with, right down to, you know, racism, PTSD, loss, grief. I mean, there's all of that can still be played with. And then, of course, you know, you've got this quest, you know, this myth arc that will, of course, carry us through as well. In addition to dealing with like these topical issues, the one thing that I don't want to see them do, and the one thing that again would absolutely lump them in with that timeless sort of show or whatever is I think that the thing that the original show did so well, especially for those first four seasons, was not having any, we didn't have Lee Harvey Oswald. you know?
Sure.
I don't want to see them, you know, trying to stop 9/11. Do you know what I mean? Like, not that they would go there, like that would be a poor taste, sure, et cetera, but I don't want to see that type of thing.
Is worth noting the almost reboot in the early 2000s, 9/11 was going to be a huge part of that story. It was both Sammy Joe and Sam leaping into 9/11 in separate roles. Anyway, just worth noting.
Now, the thing is like, it they have to be handled very delicately, because I wouldn't have them, I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with them being, you know, somewhere on the periphery of it. You know what I mean? But I wouldn't want them to be like in one of the towers. I wouldn't even want them to be at Ground Zero at all, or on one of the planes or anything like that. I just feel like it's, I don't know. To me, there are certain events that I wouldn't necessarily want to see played with in that fashion, because there's still a whole hell of a lot of people out there hurting. And you know, 20 years later, to think that a TV show might mine that in order to say, like, you know,
well, what difference is
character
that
X saves somebody from the rubble that originally died in the, you know what I mean? Like, that's just in poor taste.
Sure. But I mean, but the show, the original show, heavily mined Vietnam when that was much fresher with people.
Sure. But the thing is I guess the thing that they did successfully with Vietnam is, and the reason why I feel like it worked, is it wasn't just Sam leaping into Vietnam to save random soldier X. It was Sam leaping into Vietnam to save his brother. And I think that worked because it wasn't a faceless soldier that anyone could be attached to and think, why couldn't that have been my so-and-so? Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that people couldn't think that because of Sam's brother, because of Tom, but I think because they put those personal stakes attached to it, it was easy to kind of root for Sam as opposed to think to yourself, I lost buddies over there. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It just feels.
I'm talking about in general about how, like, Vietnam was a touchstone in a lot of episodes. Like,
totally.
like just outside of Tom.
A touchstone, yeah. Without a doubt. I just don't want to see them trying to save people at Ground Zero. You know what I mean?
Oh God. Yes. I mean, absolutely. I agree with that. Yeah, absolutely.
No, 9/11, the Iraq war. I mean, that should,
how all of those events have played out and how they've landed. And I think even like Obama's election, like, I think they'll be able to, like, I hope that they'll be able to handle things like racism with more nuance, and the fact that, like, now handle racism in the way, like, you could talk about how post Obama getting elected, we thought racism was quote over. And right, we realized with Trump's election, definitely not over.
Yeah.
You know, like, be able to handle more nuanced things like that. And that's why I'm hoping the show has the guts to be able to do that, and NBC will let them take those chances with those.
I think it will.
Stories.
I think it will. And I also would think that, much like Quantum Leap was able to do, it was able to handle a lot of these issues without necessarily coming at them head on sometimes. You know, sometimes there were absolutely episodes where things were kind of, you know, head on, but that, you know, that we can have episodes that deal with these issues, you know, without having to be Sam trying to save George Floyd. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
I gotcha. And I think that because of some of the ham-fisted network television that I've seen in recent years, yeah, there's a little bit of a fear that they would try something ham-fisted with this show because of that. But I don't think that that's the direction that they would go.
No. And here, like, you're seeing me gyrating in my chair because we've already seen on some of the Facebook groups and, like, what people are saying about how they're skeptical of the new show already. There are a lot of things in the original Quantum Leap that if we were to put it through today's lens, people would call it woke.
Oh.
And yeah. And it just occurred to me, I have no doubt in my mind that as soon as they start touching heavy on these episodes that we're talking about, like everything that has been huge in the last 20 years, racism, gay rights, transgender rights, etc. As soon as they touch on that, fans of the older show are going to definitely come out of the woodwork and start accusing Quantum Leap of going woke.
Right.
when it's right, when hopefully if they do it right, it's going to be right in the same vein of what the original series did.
Well, it's like, it's, you know, hey, here you go. Take a drink, everybody. I'm about to mention Star Trek for the first time. It's like the people that complain about Star Trek, you know, getting woke. And it's like the response that I love to see from so many people, including people that were, you know, alive and watched the original series in the 60s, is Star Trek's always been woke. You know, it's just like, you might not think so. You might not, you know, but the truth of the matter is it's always been woke. And yeah. I think that it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that terms like, you know, social justice and woke have become, you know, dirty words to some people. And I think that the show has always had that, that progressive view. And I think that there are going to be many things that the show can touch on and deal with, in you know, in a graceful, nuanced manner, I hope, while also remaining true to being, you know, an action adventure show, which I think that not action. I don't want to say action. I would much rather say adventure. A sort of a sci-fi adventure with a sort of a, you know, weekly drama vibe. But again, I mean, some of my favorite episodes on the show, we talked about this before, were some of the domestic dramas. And I think that, you know, we could absolutely get to see some really cool stuff where, you know, the leaps might be somewhat self-contained on occasion. It's the stuff back at the project that leans into the arc. And we could get some really cool, you know, pieces, little, you know, 30-minute short plays, you know, short teleplays, basically, that I think would be... The wonderful thing about Quantum Leap as a television show is that I feel like they could actually use the original format, update it to 2022, and come up with something that is actually very innovative for modern television and modern audiences. That is not your normal, you know, hour-long serialized drama. That is not, you know what I mean? It's not going to be just another show trying to be Lost or Game of Thrones or whatever that people are still trying to replicate, you know, years after those shows have gone off the air. And I think that Quantum Leap actually holds a unique position to be a show that you could use to springboard into something that's very innovative and very different from a lot of the shows that are currently on television.
I agree. I'm going to come back around to my defense of Timeless.
The floor is yours.
And I think Timeless, it kind of got a little bit of that, what you're saying. Like, there were episodes that were all like very self-contained, like whatever time period that they were in, like they had like those stories were very self-contained, and they had some nice like touching moments where they connected with like people of that time in some way. And even like historical figures, like they connected with people. Because Timeless was very opposite of Quantum Leap, where in every episode, they were dealing with a major historical event or bumping up or coming up against, you know, a major historical figure.
Yeah.
But they had those self-contained stories of every episode, but then they also had the overarching story that it took a while to get warmed up. But then after about 5 episodes, when you realize that the villain of the show is actually more complex and he's actually telling the truth in the first episode when he tells the main characters, like, we're enemies now, but we are going to work together later. When you realize that that's the truth, it actually becomes a very interesting, complex show.
Yeah.
So I guess I say, yeah, one, defense of Timeless. Two, I think you could see a little, you may see a little bit of that. Like, you get your self-contained stories, but then you got the ongoing stuff at the project going on. Yes. One thing I would love to see going on, and they tease this early in the original Quantum Leap and in Honeymoon Express, I want to see the project fighting for their life.
Yeah, totally.
A little bit.
Yeah, you know, it'll be interesting because there's
their financial life, I mean.
Right. There's a part of me that wonders, I want to loop back to that because I think that this is a perfect opportunity for us to talk a little bit about the creative team as we know it. The you know, and it's worth noting that we decided to do a little research, believe it or not, and watch some of the programs, recent programs that, you know, the team has been responsible for in the recent past. It's clear that, you know, they have deals with NBC Universal because Lillian and Winbrandt's most recent program, of course, is La Brea, which is 10 episodes in. It just started this past fall on NBC. The conceit of La Brea is, you know, is interesting. The show itself is pretty intriguing. Basically, the La Brea tar pits drain out. There's a big sinkhole that opens up. There's like this rift in space-time that people fall through and wind up. This is a light spoiler, so fast forward 15 seconds if you don't want to hear this. They wind up in the past, you know, basically saber-toothed tigers, etc. The interesting thing that the show does is that it plays with this conceit because it starts off feeling a lot like Lost, and not always in good ways. And I only watched the pilot episode, so I can only speak to that. But based off of some reading I did, it does sound like they play a lot with the idea that they're not just going to be stuck in this one place, that there's going to be the, you know, the ability to potentially go other times, other places. I thought the cast mostly was great. I thought that the writing was very, very spotty. There was some good stuff, and then there was some fucking, sorry, I just dropped my first F-bomb of the show. there was some stuff that was just paint by numbers, your standard template that you have seen in so many other shows, like literally the same lines that you have seen in your standard boilerplate television, you know, drama, action, adventure stuff for years, decades even. And it was painful. There's some stuff that did not work at all. But I will say that by the end of the episode, I was intrigued. I did want to see more. I did, however, when I was done, feel like I kind of watched a second rate Lost.
I will say, we were saying before we hit record, all I could find, because I just have the free version of Peacock, all I could find was the most recent episode of La Brea, and just jumping in, not knowing what was going on. Yes, that's exactly how I felt. I felt like I was watching a second-rate Lost. And I feel, and this is a broader statement in general, I feel the mistake that so many shows do, almost 20 years after the original Lost aired, like 17, 18 years, is they want to jump into the really weird really early.
Yeah.
And Lost did that too, but Lost had the benefits of doing the flashbacks with the characters before the plane crash. And so before they got really weird in the second season and beyond, you actually cared about the characters. And I think so many shows that try to be the next Lost, they forget that you got to invest some time and get the audience to care about the characters first.
Yep. The first season of Lost still holds up to this day as brilliant television. And so much of it has to do with how much we get to know the characters and how each flashback tells us something new and leaves us wanting to learn more. And then each present day continues the serialized story that they're telling, you know, present day. Like, I mean, that first season is just brilliant. It's just hands down brilliant. Again, I feel like a lot of shows try to copy it, you know, that they're still kind of looking for that kind of phenomenon. And we've not really had a lot of those. You know, Game of Thrones has clearly influenced so much of what we watch now as well. Not that everything's trying to be, you know, medieval fantasy or anything like that, but the type of storytelling, you know, the darkness, the grittiness, etc., the ensemble casts, but yeah, La Brea, I don't know. I like I said, it the benefit was is that I gave it a little bit of the benefit of the doubt as a pilot. It did leave me wanting to watch a little bit more. Some other shows that Winbrandt and Lillian have worked on, they created and ran a show called Godfriended Me, which has kind of a familiar premise about, a guy helping people, being sent on missions to help people, reminiscent of Quantum Leap, reminiscent of Touched by an Angel, Highway to Heaven, early edition. You know, it was that kind of show with these overtly heavy religious overtones. I couldn't watch it. It's not available for streaming. You'd have to, pay for it. And I wasn't going to just buy an episode on faith. So I decided to just read a little bit about it. Reviews were middling at best. I'll check it out at some point because I am interested in kind of seeing, the prior work, of the people involved. They also worked on Gotham. Now it's interesting because our friend Larry Gianni, did make a comment about how, he was dismayed because they worked on Gotham and he didn't think that show was very good. He tuned out after the first season or whatever. My rebuttal to that, Larry, is they didn't work on the early seasons. They worked on the last season, especially, and they wrote quite a few episodes for that last season. And the last season, by all rights, I've not seen it, is considered to be some of the best work, that they did, and some of the best stuff, DC universe wise. In particular, they wrote, a three-part episode called The Dark Knight, which was heavily acclaimed. So for what it's worth, they might not have been involved in what you didn't like. They also worked on Hawaii Five-O, CSI New York, Alcatraz, Kyle XY, which is interesting because Kyle XY, I remember, was a show that got a lot of buzz. Again, I saw like bits and pieces of it. But as far as being kind of a sci-fi genre type show that did well. As far as their pedigree goes, it seems very, TV-ish, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, sure. they've been working in television for the past, 20 years basically. And they've worked together on almost all of the stuff that they've done. So these are two guys that know each other very well and that, that work well together, have worked as writers and producers for the shows that I just mentioned. Now they're going to be the showrunners according to what we've read. Now the interesting element of all of this, in my opinion, is the executive producer by the name of Martin Garrow. And the reason why I say that is because he has in my mind, a much more interesting and diverse career. Again, pretty much all television, but the television that he's been involved with, like, really intrigues me. He worked on Stargate, SG-1, Atlantis, and Stargate Universe. He was the executive producer of Stargate Atlantis. He also produced a show that I adored for HBO called Bored to Death, with Ted Danson and Jason Schwartzman and Zach Galifianakis, about three stoner detectives. That was just so funny and so good at what it did. He also was the showrunner, creator, and executive producer for the entirety of the NBC show Blindspot. I watched
that's the pilot. The show that has me intrigued. Okay,
I watched the pilot of Blindspot last night, and I actually loved it.
I remember because I re-upped my Hulu today so I could watch that. And when I jumped back in, I realized, at some point I watched the first 10 minutes
mm-hmm.
and then got steered away. And I want to go back and get that. The thing that catch me, it's like, the first 10 minutes of Blindspot, like, our protagonist, she is literally dropped naked in a bag in the middle of Times Square. She unzips the bag. She has no idea who she is. Her body is covered in tattoos. And it reminded me, and I can't remember where I read this. I think it may have been in the Quantum Leap book, or I think that was it. An interview with Belisario. The first scene that he wrote, he didn't realize that this was Sam yet.
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember this.
The first scene that he wrote, like, the way he described it is like, you were coming down on an aerial shot of a naked man laying in a desert. And the way it's shot, you don't know if it's 1,000 years from now or today. And then we zoom in on this man, and like through voiceover something, like, that he has amnesia. He does not know who he is. And all of a sudden, he is getting picked up by a couple of cops. He's getting thrown in the back of a cop car. He could tell from the license plate he's in the 1950s. He doesn't know what time he belongs to, but he does not belong to the 1950s. And from what the cops are saying, he knows that he's a Native American, and he knows that he is not a Native American. But that's all that he knows. And watching the first 5 minutes of Blindspot, I was like, that's about as close as you can get.
Yeah. Yeah.
To that scenario.
It's really well done. I mean, there are definitely some cliches that take place over the course of the episode. But overall, I was just the production values, the quality of actors that they've hired, the sort of the split between the storytelling of, that they kind of have this mission that they have to go on based off of the tattoos that are on her body. And on their way to the mission, they are in between that. They're also, of course, there's all this personal drama for the characters, and in particular for her, for Jane Doe, because, she doesn't know who she is. There was a really great balance struck between kind of being in the field with our two main characters and the stuff happening back at the offices, which again, I thought was struck a great parallel between what it might be like to have, the Leaper and hologram or companion or whatever they end up doing, and, the project. So I felt like while I was watching the show, it was out of everything connected to the people involved, these three men that are involved with the show that we know, it was the thing that kind of excited me the most, because it made me think clearly, like, this guy knows how to make some good TV. And for what it's worth, the show ran for 5 seasons, which was that was the planned arc. That was, so it completed its story. It didn't get canceled. It didn't, it had good ratings. It had pretty good reviews. So that to me was the moment when I kind of was like, all right, I'm really excited to see what he does.
I agree. I'm reading everything about Blindspot right now, because, like, I know it was canceled, but I'm encouraged to hear that it had a planned arc and it wrapped its arc up.
Yeah.
And that would be interesting to if they were to do that with Quantum Leap.
And 5 seasons is a good run.
Yeah. If they have 5 seasons, a good run, 100, getting the syndication. And it just occurred to me, what if we cheat? What if we retcon? And what would happen? What would happen at the end of their 5-season story arc? Sam went home.
Right. I think that
would he want to go home? I mean, the project's gone, his best friend's gone.
I'm sure will be, we didn't even mention this earlier when we were talking about legacy characters, but Donna.
She's kind of in my head canon. We're gonna get to the novels, listeners, at some point. But in my head canon, I don't know if you remember, but in Mirror's Edge, the final Quantum Leap novel, as I remember it, it's heavily suggested like Donna's ready to move on with her life. And in my mind, I think that's kind of,
One of the things that would be really interesting too, and this is just some fan wank for you, is that the parallel between, Al and Beth and Sam and Donna might be interesting for them to play with. If the Leaper eventually, we get to the final episode and the Leaper realizes that they can, they can keep Sam and Donna together by doing something, and that is what brings Sam home as well. That kind of parallel would be kind of fascinating to play with. I don't know if I'd like it, quite honestly. I don't know if that's the direction that I would want them to go, but I mean, it's an avenue that they could explore. And again, Donna might not even be in the show. She might not ever be mentioned. I imagine she'll be mentioned at some point, but so much is up in the air. Sure. It's exciting.
It's exciting. So much is up in the air
to talk about.
We are. I mean, so much is up in the air. Like, it may not even get picked up. It probably will. With the pedigree that's attached to it, it's probably going to get picked up.
I feel as though, based off of the announcement, the way that it was announced, the way that it was picked up by all the trade magazines, the way that Martin Garrow, who, again, is the guy that kind of excites me the most, based off of his involvement, was tweeting about it and talking about how this is. He said it's been so hard to keep this secret. So it sounds to me like this has been in the works for a while, that, that this is definitely going to happen. Now, it could end up being that they film this thing and we just get like a 2-hour, TV movie out of it. I doubt that that's what will happen. We're definitely going to get like 10 to 13 episodes. We're going to get at least that. I have no doubt.
at least give us that, and at least NBC, you I almost dropped the F by myself. You owe us, if it only lasts like one season or half season, wrap the story up.
Right.
Wrap the entire story up. You know what I mean? Give us that courtesy.
Yeah, you know, and here's the other thing too. Again, it's hard to do, but we really do have to put our nostalgia away. We cannot expect all of the same creative team members. I know that there's a petition to get Dorliac on as a costume designer, which would be lovely. I would love to see what he would come up with. You know, I really would. He's a lovely man. We're probably not going to hear all the same music. You know, we're not, the theme song might be different.
Because I saw somebody else put that. There's not going to be a theme song.
Well, there will not
be a theme song.
Right.
There'll be some instrumental music. But yeah, they don't do opening themes or something anymore. Exactly. It'll be interesting to see, because they had to beat you over the head every week with the Saga Cell, as they called it.
Right.
If they'll even do that.
No.
I don't think they will.
No. I think that we'll get that probably in the pilot, you know, and maybe like, you know, season premieres, maybe like, you know, previously ons every once in a while, like the season finale or something, you know, whenever they do sweeps or they do like an episode, there'll be like an entry point episode. They might do something similar, but I don't think it's going to be on every episode. You're right. There's not going to be an opening credits, a theme song type deal. You know, most shows don't have that, you know. Again, now Game of Thrones had that, sure. But you know, it's a little different, being on HBO. So we've got to put the nostalgia aside. You know, we've got our Blu-rays and our DVDs and our syndicated run and eventually our Peacock streaming, because let's face it, probably before summer is out, Quantum Leap will be on Peacock in order to gear up for, you know, the new show coming this fall. So I think that the best thing that we can do is to, you know, not expect this to be a retread of the same ground. I wouldn't want that, quite frankly. This is not going to be Scott Bakula as our White Knight saving the day every week. You know, that when we see Sam, one of the things I mentioned to Jessica, if I'm writing this, okay, and it's the season finale of the first season, and our new team has finally figured out how to get to Sam, and they walk into Al's place and they see him behind the bar and they're all giddy with excitement, I would not be a bit surprised if he looks at them and says, "Hi, my name's Al." And he doesn't remember who he is. He doesn't remember anything about what's past. He doesn't know anything about what they're doing there, that he has now taken the place of the bartender, that he's the one, you know, he knows all this other stuff, but he's kind of, you know, he's just forgotten who Sam was, because he spent 30 years just leaping through time. And there's, you know, the effect that that's had on him, he has no identity anymore, you know? Yeah.
And it's worth noting, that is in line with what Belisario had in mind. It's worth noting that Belisario at one point said that at some point he imagined that Sam would start to lose his mind. That's what shock theater was the start of that.
Yeah.
That's why in the final season, Sam starts melding more.
Right.
With the leapies, he is starting, because he's trading places so often, he is literally losing his mind. So I like that idea. And I don't want it to be dark and gritty. Like, I want it to be like what you just said.
Right.
Like, he's in a positive role. He's, you know, this, you know, he has all this other knowledge. He's just lost knowledge of himself. I don't want it to be this dark and gritty thing that we find him have gone, you know, he's gone crazy after 30 years of leaping.
Yeah, I think a touch of whimsy would benefit the show a great deal. I really do. I think, you know, remembering the heart of the show is going to be extremely important. Like, those are the things to get nostalgic for. You know what I mean? Remember the heart that this show had. Remember the positive, you know, outlook that the show often had. That doesn't mean it can't go dark places. And that doesn't even mean that if Sam takes part in the show, can't have flashes of being a bit of a darker character because of the fact that he's been marooned for 30 years in time, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe he would be a little bitter. Maybe he would be like, you know, why couldn't they find me? Where has everyone been this whole time? But I think that the better way to kind of treat that is to have it, again, bit by bit, piece by piece, not just present us with this, you know, this dark character who's pissed off. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I do think that the Evil Leaper project is definitely something to explore as well. It gives them some antagonists that'll be interesting to kind of see, you know, what happens.
And I think we talked about this with the Evil Leapers, and I honestly can't remember if this was your idea or my idea. I don't want the Evil Leapers to be mustache twirling villains.
Yeah.
So much as that they were on the original show.
Right.
I love the idea of the Evil Leapers being somewhere further in the future, and their mission is more informed by like, no, you think you're fixing the past. We're from further in the future, and you're messing it up.
Right. It's, you know, kind of like 11/22/63, you know,
yeah,
where it's like,
exactly,
it's
yeah.
like he thinks he's, you know, saving the world here. And then he gets back and things are just awful. So
yeah
I think that there's a lot of cool stuff for them to explore. I think that I'm excited to hear casting. If we get, you know, any information that we, you know, can share, because I do want to be sensitive to our source. But if we know anything, that even if we know something that we can't share, we will certainly try to point you in the right direction as best we can. But if we do get information we can share, we will share it right away. So you know, definitely make sure you follow us on Twitter, check us out on Facebook or Instagram. And Dennis?
Maybe even a TikTok. I don't know.
because we will definitely be trying to keep things as timely as we possibly can. And of course we'll record with more frequency in the lead up to this.
I think now it's like, that's the thing off. We still got to talk about the novels, the comics, and there's other stuff we talk about. I will back and say, out of every other thing we mentioned, I do want to throw in the one thing I would love to see them be able to do, and this, they would probably have to do this in the pilot or an early episode, the lost ending that was discovered, like, what, 3 years ago now? I don't think they could actually, like, include the scene, because I don't know if they ever actually finished it.
Right.
But in some kind of flashback capacity, if they could just give us flashes of that.
Sure.
Final scene between Al and Beth and their study.
It'd be a great way to involve Al on screen in a way, to use that used footage, you know. Although the trouble with that, of course, is that's standard definition. You know,
so that's what I mean. Like, they would have to put some effects or something over it, and you know, and like kind of mask the fact that
somebody else we didn't talk about is like Beth. Obviously, you know, I mean, that's a character that if they wanted to, they could
certainly pull her back. She has is she still at one point in time? Susan Dial was following us on the Twitter. Let's see if she let's see if she stuck around. We follow each other. We do.
How about that?
So, she
hasn't tweeted. She's not our source, guys.
She's not our source. And she hasn't, excuse me, and she hasn't tweeted in like over 3 years.
You know,
she's a Gemini like us. She was born May 25th.
How about that? Yeah. One other thing worth mentioning, we mentioned it early in the episode. I didn't necessarily want to include their names as we were doing the rundown, because obviously anyone listening to this podcast has probably listened to us before. And if you haven't, please go back, check out our earlier episodes. Some of them are a little rough, but hey. We certainly talk a lot about them, because they're the creators. And that's Don Bellisario and Deborah Pratt. Here's my quick 2 cents on that. Don Bellisario, I believe it's probably going to just be a bit of an honorary title. I don't imagine he's going to have a ton to do with the show. I would imagine that the capacity that he will have will be, you know, almost half of what George Lucas currently has with, the Star Wars universe. Like I imagine he'll visit the set even less than George Lucas has visited the Mandalorian set, for instance. He might give a couple of ideas or whatever. I'm sure he'll be involved on some level. It's great to have his name on it. I just don't think that's the space that he's in anymore. He's the guy's in his 80s. It's like, I mean, come on, you know? I also think, however, that the flip side of that is that Deborah Pratt, if she's not writing for this show, I will I will literally want to say, what are you guys doing? Because those screenplays from the late 80s and early 90s hold up to this day. She wrote some of the finest hours of episodic television I truly believe I've ever seen. She's wonderful. She is, in my opinion, one of the chief, if not the chief reasons why we love the show as much as we do. And I want her involvement to be, if not central, pretty damn close to it, because I think she has great ideas about it.
I have said it before, from everything that I have read, especially in the last like 2 or 3 years, Belisario may be credited with being the show creator. He may have come up with the original idea of like someone leaping into someone else, but I really think the heart of the show,
yes,
and those ideas came from Deborah Pratt.
Right.
And so in my mind, she is just as much a creator of the show as Belisario was.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I just, I'm very happy to see her name attached to the show, you know, in any capacity, but I really do hope that she gets to write a few episodes.
Sure. And at least a voice cameo is Ziggy. I'm sure they're going to rebuild Ziggy in some way, and it'll be interesting if
they're going to do the Val Kilmer.
Yes. Yeah. It'll
it's be another Knight Rider reference.
All right. It'll be interesting to see if they do kind of like a sassy computer kind of thing, because like that seems like an outdated kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems like that was funny in the early 90s. That's something I don't know if it would translate to present day. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Ziggy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things about the technology of the show that'll be very interesting to see what direction they decide to take it.
Because I know, like, what are they going to do with the imaging chamber? Because in the imaging, you know, because in the original series, it was actually a chamber.
Right.
Excuse me. And the reboot that they were going to do, it was literally going to be Al putting on a VR headset. So I'm wondering what they're going to do. I do hope that they go with like the imaging chamber kind of idea. That seems more interesting.
Well, cause the funny thing to me is 20 years ago, the VR headset would have been kind of a cool idea, but today it would be hokey. Whereas the imaging chamber 20 years ago might've been hokey, but today I think it actually would be more appropriate. I'm fascinated to see the changes that they'll make to the project and how that will be portrayed. And you know, will our team of adventurers, will they be going into, you know, a dusty old abandoned site in Stallions Gate, New Mexico, and having to fire up everything kind of as renegades with no government help or oversight? Or will they be, which based off of these producers and the fact that they have the other shows that they've worked on and the ways that they've worked on them, I do think that we're going to see authority in some fashion. So it would actually make more sense if they are involved in some capacity with the government or military, and they are, but they have a personal stake as well. Cause that seems to be like, honestly, you look at Blind Spot, you look at La Brea, you look at a lot of the other shows that they work on. That's just an element of what they do, you know,
sure.
That there is an authority figure of some fashion. So I have a feeling that it will be kind of some sort of official, you know, reopening to Project Quantum Leap. Now, what gets us there, too.
Yeah,
is anyone's guess.
That's interesting. Yeah. And here's the last thing I'm going to say, and maybe we should start to wrap it up. However we're introduced to the Leaper, I just want them to be dropped in kind of like the protagonist of Blind Spot.
Right.
I want to see things from her point of view. If it is a her, I want to see things from her point of view at the beginning of the show. Amnesia.
Yep.
I want to see her pop up like somewhere like 1996, right, something like that. No effing clue what's going on. And then, you know, we kind of get to see it going through her eyes. And then we get like this random other person just like popping up and giving her weird smiles, kind of like Al did.
Yeah.
In the pilot episode. And then we go back through flashbacks and then we find out how they got there. That's what I want to say.
I think that's a brilliant idea, actually. And I think it's a wonderful way to, you know, to pay homage to the original pilot and the original series. And I think that it's the perfect way to hook in new viewers as well. You know, I think that that's sure. kind of the way to do it, because it's like one thing we didn't even talk about was Swiss cheese. You know, I think that having, you know, someone that doesn't remember all this stuff and has to have those gaps filled in and can do it by way of flashbacks and getting to see the project, as opposed to, you know, a character, you know, in a bathrobe with a hangover saying, this is how everything happened. Do you know what sure. I mean? Like, I think that yeah. that would be much more narratively interesting for a modern audience. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was sold. I was sold from the minute I saw it. So let's roll. Let's see what happens.
Let's do it.
Before we get out of here, you heard my spiel at the beginning. Dennis, how are you? How are things with you?
What's things are good. So, moved down here, and if you've been listening to the show, excuse me, I've been a massage therapist for several years. Started off renting a space in someone's established practice, and then I ended up buying the practice. And things were going swimmingly until about a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
Until Omicron really set in. So this last week has been the slowest week
yeah.
I have had since being here. Don't know. I think if projections look right, I think in the next couple of weeks as Omicron passes, like, things will start to get better. But yeah, it's a little... it's a little weird right now.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's been fantastic. We love being down here in Southern Illinois. We came up for Thanksgiving. We had dinner, you know, with you and some other friends. And as we were coming up to Chicago for Thanksgiving, we were passing through Chicago on the way to Michigan. I was worried that when we stopped in Chicago, I would really miss it.
Mm.
And I would be like, oh God, what did we do? Uprooting our family and moving it to an entirely different environment.
Sure.
And I will tell you, the only two things I enjoyed about being in Chicago was lunch with you all. And then we stopped at H Mart, our favorite Korean grocery in Niles, on the way out. The rest of the time, as we were driving through Chicago and how crowded it was and how difficult parking was and everything compared to what it is down here, Betsy, my wife, and I, we were both like, yep, yep, we made the right decision. After we left lunch with you guys on our way to H Mart, we drove through our old neighborhood, the last neighborhood that we lived in, yeah. and we're like, yep, yeah. yep, we made the right decision. So other than like job weirdness of the last couple of weeks, we have absolutely loved being down here and the total change of life from city living.
Yeah, that's great. I'm so glad to hear it. I know obviously it's a huge change, and anytime there's kids involved, it can, you know, luckily they're young enough that I feel like they didn't necessarily have any strong attachment to this place, you know.
Sure.
I mean Harrison's obviously old enough that there are probably memories that he has formed that he, you know, certainly sure. has yeah. now and will potentially have, you know, 20 years from now, and can be like, oh yeah, you know, some of my earliest memories are living in Chicago.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I will say three things. We actually did before we came and had lunch with you all, we went to the Field Museum that morning. Mm. So he always loves that. He loves Sue,
oh,
the
yeah.
T-Rex totally. On display there. So yeah, that was a lot of fun. But yeah, that's life with us.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah.
Well, you know, I will certainly say that this is very, very exciting, and I'm glad to see you. I'm glad to be back doing this. You know, I have other endeavors that are as far removed from Quantum Leap as possible. So it's not like I've been just sitting around spinning my wheels. There's another weekly podcast that I've been involved in. I've been a guest on a couple of podcasts that, again, are as far removed from this world as possible, and had a couple of other gigs. But this is home. This always will feel like home when it comes to this medium and being able to get on here and talk with you. So I'm thrilled that we have the motivation and the impetus to do it. And I cannot wait to chart this journey, because again, our intent is to be on top of it, and we want to be your go-to, you know, we want to be your source all the kind of in-depth reviews, overviews, and news that you're used to with us. And there obviously will be other Quantum Leap podcasts that pop up. There will be, I'm sure, the Quantum Leap podcast will have some stuff
back up
more frequently than their once every 3 months format or whatever that they've been doing lately. And again, I'm sure that there will be some other people that are out there that are bringing you content. But my only hope is that we can be your go-to, that you can go back into the archives and hear everything you want to hear and could possibly want to know about the original series episodes that are literally 2 to 3 times as long as the episode we're talking about.
Speaking of viewers, if you're on that, so I did not even realize this because I haven't visited our podcast page in months. Podiant got sold. So now we are on
Castos.
We're on Castos. Okay. So if you go to our social media, now that's what is linked on everything, our website, our original WordPress website, I'm about ready to burn it to the ground. Because every time I go to log in, it tells me that the account is closed. And I go through this recovery process and I finally get it back. And I've been trying to do it today. And I keep getting looped around in the same circle, doing the same thing over again. I am at the point, I think I hate WordPress. I love Squarespace. That's where I do everything else. I'm just going to set up a new website, new domain. I'm just going to copy everything and I'm just going to move it all over there, make it look nicer. And aside from like our Castos home, that will be our new home for stuff.
Well, it is a new day, and we are absolutely going to be giving, I think, everything a bit of a makeover, social and obviously the website. And Dennis is, I'm sure, going to do an amazing job with all of that sort of stuff. But we're committed to bringing you our very best, and we appreciate everyone who has been with us either since the beginning or even recently. We've had, the wonderful thing is we'll get messages every once in a while from people that have recently discovered us and, say that they've binged Quantum Leap over the pandemic, and then they binged our podcast, or that they're halfway through and this or so. It's so great to hear that, and we really appreciate you all so much. As we have joked many times, without anybody listening, we're just two asshats screaming into the void. So
two cis white asshats screaming into the void.
Two tired dads screaming.
Two tired dads. There we go.
Dennis, where can people find you online should they choose to do so?
Twitter, I am Dad to the Future. On TikTok, I'm Dad to the Future. I do have a Dad to the Future Facebook page. I hardly update it. Just find us through Facebook and I comment frequently on there. Find me through there. Friend me. I'm Facebook easy. As long as you don't look like some young 20 something hot girl that's just trying to spam me, I will accept your friend request. That's where you can find me. And you are Strummer Fane.
Dennis Twitter. Is a lot easier than I am. You can find me on Twitter @Strummer_Fane. That's my personal account. I don't necessarily post a ton over there. And of course, you can find me through the Facebook page, which is Fate's Wide Wheel, Quantum Leap Podcast with Sam and Dennis. Just search Fate's Wide Wheel will be the first thing that pops up, I'm sure. You can also find the podcast Twitter page, which I have been updating more frequently since the news dropped, @Fate's Wide Wheel. And we will be updating again. The Twitter, I think, will be kind of your primary go-to. That's where I'm going to try to put stuff first. Dennis usually kind of does the Facebook stuff. So, Facebook will be there for sure. But I'm going to try to get, the Twitter stuff out there as soon as possible. Subscribe and like us and follow us on whatever podcast platform you're using. It does help. Write us a review. All of that helps to raise our visibility and gets more people listening. It's been an absolutely intense, excruciating, horrible, awful, blissful, amazing, rejuvenating, dark and light couple of years. I think that we are, exhausted mentally, physically, and emotionally in a lot of ways, but there's so much more to give and there's so much more out there to take part in. And we definitely want to be a place where you can find some joy, get some enjoyment, sometimes rail against us if you disagree with us. And that's okay. We're up for a good discussion. And we're going to also get a comment page and even a listener mailbag opened up real soon too, so you can send us questions. Because while we don't claim to know everything about this show, we do know a hell of a lot. So you could feel free to ask us your questions about the show. Ask us questions about us if you want to. Anything you want to know about our lives, as most of you listening out there, and if there's any new listeners we've picked up because of the announcement. Dennis and I both worked as professional actors, semi-professional actors at times. Non-professional actors at other times.
I got paychecks.
I got, that's right.
I lived off those paychecks for a time. I was at one point in time a professional actor.
We were working actors here in Chicago and other places for that matter. So, you know, we definitely consider ourselves artists. This is a creative outlet for us, and we look forward to connecting with you because one thing that we've both learned in theater, it's better when there are other people involved. Otherwise, it's just masturbation. So we would love to connect with you, and feel free to reach out to us on the platforms that we just mentioned. In the meantime, take care of yourselves, take care of one another, stay safe out there, be kind, be curious. And we look forward to talking to you again very soon. Dennis?
What Sam said.
Let's sleep out of here.
All right. Bye-bye.
But it's not mine. But you can see you're mad.